on the iVariant Issues Project, what we're now beginning to call the IDN VIP, Variant Issues Project. And we're here this afternoon to launch the project and to tell you a little bit about it and how we intend to proceed. Kurt Pritz was hoping to be here. He's the executive responsible for the project. But he is triple booked at the moment, so he is, and he's the sole speaker in another session, so he's not here. But so I'll go straight into the first presentation and ask Francisco Arias here to put up the first slide, which gives us the agenda, which you probably should have. You see that we have a number of speakers. And I'd just like to introduce the team, the project team. Kurt Pritz is the executive sponsor. I'm the project leader. And the team members are Anand Mishra, Naila Saras, Kim Davies, Bahar Esmat, Steve Sheng, and Francisco Arias, who are all here. So this is Francisco, it's Naila, that's Kim. Who else have we got? Have we got Steve here? Steve, Bahar, Anand? Yeah, we're all here. Good. So, and we have a number of presentations. Can we look at the list of presenters? Who will all be speaking, four presenters. But first I'm going to ask Francisco to outline the project proposal to you. It's a draft. It's available for public comment. And we're looking for feedback on the project proposal so that we can finalize the proposal and kick off the project. So, Francisco, over to you.
Hello. So I will start talking about why we are doing this project. As some of you may know, this is a long-standing request from several members of the IDN user communities for several years. And we are starting this project now because there is a board mandate from the resolution on 25 September 2010 to start a project to basically define what the problem is to develop an issues report. The current status as today is that the applicants may declare the variant strings for the TLD that in their application. This is for the new ETLDs and in the IDN fast track. But no variant TLD string will be delegated until the proper solutions are developed and implemented. And this will be the first step in that direction. So what is being proposed in this project is to conduct 5 study cases with participants from the different communities. In this case, we're proposing Arabic, Chinese, Cyrillic, Indic, and Latin. And each of these study cases will be composed of community members' experience in DNS, security, policy, linguistics, registry operations, and community representatives. We are thinking that maybe some of these members may be shared between the teams, given that some of these specialties, let's say, are of global nature and do not need to be from the community. For example, DNS is the same no matter where. We also are aware that this is not the first time that that this has been done. There are previous works on the IDN variants, and we intend to use that as an input. We also know that there are current efforts working on the subject. For example, the joint working group on IDNs from the CCNSO and GNSO is working on policy for IDNs in general, and one of the topics is the variant TLDs. We have a session. We were in their session on Monday, and we talk about the subject, and see how we could coordinate our efforts. There is also a technical effort underway in the ITF, in the DNS extension working group, trying to define what is called there the name aliases, which is something that could be used eventually as a solution for the variants. In terms of the project scope, as I mentioned before, the idea is to define the problem. We are not starting a project to actually produce the solutions. We are trying to define the problem. Why we are doing this? When people talk about variants, normally there are different things that people mention. So one of the first thing we need to do is clearly define the terms and bet with the technical and linguistic communities so we know what we are talking about. And another goal of this project will be to identify the challenges, the requirements for the ID and variant TLDs. The final outcome of this project is expected to be an issues report integrating the common case uses and the common issues and the case-specific issues for each of the study cases. And we also are thinking of having intermediate reports from each of the case studies. And this is the proposed timeline. Important milestone here is the recruitment phase where we will like to have a participation from the community. We're expecting to have done by the end of April. And as I mentioned, the case studies will be something in the middle of the project by the end of September. And we are expecting to finalize this project by the end of this year. We understand that this is something that some communities really would like to have solved by yesterday. We will try to work as fast as possible, but given the complexities of the problem, this is the timeline that we think is doable. And finally, we will very much appreciate your feedback. The public the project proposal is currently in public comment. There you can see the link. The public comment ends on 6th of April. And if you also, you could talk with any of the project team members while we are here in San Francisco.
Thank you. Thank you, Francisco. Can you bring up the slide that shows our definition of variants? Because I think that's an important, and I don't want to get into a long discussion about variants, but I want to be clear what we are taking as our definition of variance, as our starting definition. So we're talking about variance. We're not talking about confusability. We're talking about variant characters occur when a single conceptual character, some people suggest that it should be named slightly different, but a single conceptual character can be identified with two or more different Unicode code points with graphic representations that may or may not be visually similar. ID and variant TLDs contain one or more characters that have such variants. That's our definition, and that's what we're working with. I know that there are a wide variety of definitions, but that's the one we're starting with. So, thank you for that. Could you put up a slide in relation to the Cyrillic case, Francisco? Thank you. Now, as you saw from Francisco's presentation, we had identified five study cases: Cyrillic, Arabic, Latin, Chinese, and Indic. Thank you. We've already been advised that INDIC is such a broad term with such a vast array of scripts that we may have to focus a little more closely to actually get any reasonable work done. But in the case of the Cyrillic script, we consulted with Dr. Andrei Kolesnikov, who's the CEO of the Coordination Center for .ru, and he is advised that ID invariants are, quotes, not applicable in our case. So that we have that advice. Now, that doesn't mean that that is necessarily a true statement, but that's the advice we've received. We'll publish that on the website, and we look forward to comments on that and advice on that from the community. If that is a true statement, there are no variants. If you look at the script table, it looks obvious. Then maybe this part of the project is quite brief, and we might move on to the confusability issues in relation to Cyrillic, Latin, and Greek. But make no immediate jumps to conclusion and just simply say that's the advice we've received, and we'll put that up on the website and see what the community says. So that, for the moment, deals with the presentation on the Cyrillic case. And I'd like to ask our first presenter, Dr. Sarmat Hossain, who's professor and head of the Center for Language Engineering, the Institute of Computer Science in Lahore, Pakistan. Would you like to sit here? Ah, yes. Well, Francisco has your presentation.
It doesn't have an animation in it.
So. Ah, right. We'll sort that out in a second. So we need to get a new presentation because there are animations in the presentation. Sorry. So Dr. Hossain is going to talk to us about the Arabic ID invariants case study. Thank you.
Thank you. So the aim of this, I've been given 10 minutes, so it's a reasonably wide topic, and I'm going to go through this reasonably quickly, and I'm not sure if it's probably not possible to explain the whole thing in 10 minutes. The idea is to give you just a sense of what the kind of issues exist. And obviously, if you have any questions, more detailed questions, feel free to come and ask after the session. So Arabic script is used across a reasonably wide geographical region. It's used to write more than about 80 different languages. So, and you know, here are some examples of the languages which are written in Arabic from the different regions. Basically, Arabic writing system is a consonantal writing system. What that means is that only the consonants are written. Vowels are actually not explicitly written unless they are long vowels. And the short vowels are optional, which means a user or a writer may choose to write these or may choose to not write these or ignore them. Another very interesting thing about Arabic script is that it is bidirectional, which means that letters are written from right to left, but digits are written from left to right. And just to show you an example, each letter appears towards the left of the previous one, but the digits appear right of the previous one. So when you're writing digits and letters, the direction of the writing system changes. Another thing which you probably also saw was that it's a cursive writing system, which means that the shapes of the letters join with each other, and shapes of these letters actually change based on whether they're initial part of the or medial or final or isolated part of the joined form, which is normally referred to as a ligature. And then there are certain characters which don't join at all. All right, and they are represented in Unicode in two areas, 0600 to 06FF, and then 0750 to 07F77F. And there are a lot of different writing styles which are used. Mostly, there are two traditions, the NASC style, which is the first one, and the Nastaliq style, which is the second one. The others are mostly stylistic, but the first two are actually used very concretely by different language communities in the world. Okay, so given that background, the reason I gave that background to you was because I will probably refer to some of this later in my presentation. There are two kinds or sources of variants which are caused within Arabic script. One which I'm calling intrinsic is caused because the community which uses the language and the script consider two different strings to be the same, even though they may visibly be different. The other reason a variant is caused is not because something which is coming from within the language or script community, but because the way the script has been encoded by the Unicode standard. And that's what I'm referring to as an extrinsically motivated variant. The extrinsic ones are mostly look exactly the same. The intrinsic ones may or may not look exactly the same. So why do we want to have variant management? There are two very significant reasons. We need to protect users from security threats like phishing, and we need to give perception of to the users that the internet, whichever way they type a string, still resolves to the same URL, and that is only possible through a variant management process. I'm just going to very briefly touch on some of the linguistic issues. And again, this part, if you need more detail, please come back and talk to me. So there are technical issues, there are user interface issues, and there are policy kind of issues which need to be addressed. Just to give you a few examples. So one of the exact variant issue is caused through the normalization process that the way Arabic is written, there is a core character and there is a combining mark sometimes. And sometimes what happens in Unicode is that you get both versions. So you get, there's a Unicode for the combined form, and then there is also separate Unicodes for the uncombined forms, which can actually combine to give you the same string. And some of these normalized forms are defined by Unicode, but actually some of them are not. So I'll just give you an example of these two characters at the bottom. If you look at the second row, one of these characters is 691, and the other one is a combination of 631 and 615. Can you tell them apart? If you cannot, then if they're not mapped onto each other, then somebody will be able to fish this site, which will be using this character. Okay, so another issue occurs, a similar issue occurs because vowel marks, as I said, are optionally written. So that's the second line. In the second line at the bottom, you'll see that if I combine 627 with 64F, the 64F is an optional mark. Even if I don't write it, it's considered the same as when I write 627 without 64F. So let me actually do it this way. It's not showing up properly. So the first two strings are the same, the one with the vowel mark and without the vowel mark. The second two strings are the same as well, the one with the vowel mark and without the vowel mark. But interestingly, if you put the vowel marks, the first and the second strings are actually not the same. So the first and second map onto the same string as far as equivalence is concerned, but if you make it explicit, they don't map onto each other. So that actually causes a problem. Anyways, Okay, so there are then this third kind of similarity where you have actually some different characters which sometimes actually look like the same thing. So as I said, Arabic script has four possible shapes of a character. A particular shape may be distinct from another particular shape of another character, but in another context, those two shapes actually may look very similar. So if you look at the medial form of these two characters, the isolated forms are totally different, so there are two distinct characters. But if you look at the medial forms or the initial forms, they are exactly the same. And I've given you an example of our IDN CCTLD string, .Pakistan. And one of the string is written with 06A9, and one the other one's written with 06F3. And can you tell the difference? You probably cannot, because actually there is no difference. They're identical to each other, even though they have different codes behind each other. So that's a variant case. I gave you an example of an exact match. There are also some approximate matches. So there are other characters which are available in the IDN, in the Arabic table, which two users are, you know, they may look different, but users may perceive them as the same characters, only stylistic variation. So something like a difference between an Times New Roman font and Arial font. Users may perceive a similar difference between 6A9 and 6AA, the two different cuffs. So these six different strings which I've listed here for .Pakistan, for example, may actually be perceived as the same string for the people who use this string in Pakistan, even though they have come from a variety of or at the back they have a variety of Unicode code points. So moving on, there is a real issue with digits. Obviously, people use ASCII digits now freely mixed with Arabic digits, and Arabic itself has two sets of digits, and Unicode will tell you the reason why. And so the question then is, I've listed some strings here. Are they strings? Are all these strings? So all these strings which I've listed are composed of different Unicodes. So at the back, at the DNS layer, there are different strings, technically. Do you agree that they're all different strings, or you think they're same? Or some are different or some are same? So who decides what's different and same? And that's one of the issues which obviously this project needs to resolve. And then there are also some other issues. So I'm going to skip some of these things. You can look at the presentation. You're free to contact me later. So there's some of these technical issues. There are also some application layer issues. So I've written exactly the same strings in Internet Explorer and Google Chrome. You can see that the sequence in which they're written is one's left to right and one's right to left. And therefore, it is not very easily possible for a user to understand what's actually written. So there's inconsistent user interface. Also, the user bar is very small. So if we use a mark, it is very hard to tell which mark it is because it's just such a small font. So it can also cause phishing kind of issues. In any case, so those are some of the technical or application layer issues. There are also, obviously, once we start talking about variants, there are some policy level issues, meaning how do we actually articulate these variants in a language table. There are no formal mechanisms at this time which are defined. How do we implement these variants in registries, whether we bundle them, block them, reserve them. There are, again, not enough work in this area, which is, but there is work being done in these areas by different groups. So obviously, we would want one world, one internet. That's the slogan we have. But if we do want one internet, variants have to be handled. Otherwise, we will not actually have one internet. So it's a very fundamental issue which needs to be addressed. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you very much indeed for managing in 10 minutes to cover a huge topic for us. So that gives you some indication of the level of complexity in the various scripts. And our goal is to try and define what the user expectations are, what the requirements are for the solutions. So thank you very much indeed. Could I ask our second speaker, Dr. Xiaodong Li, who is the VP and CTO of CNNIC, to come up and tell us about some of the user requirement issues for the Chinese IDN variants. Thank you, Nayela. I'm going to take questions at the end. I'd like to get through the presentations and then take questions at the end. Thank you.
Okay. I use a physical computer to make my presentation. Upon Dennis' request, there is a 10-minute presentation. I think I cannot give you much information about what's the very issue, but the Chinese domain name. So I just give you a very brief introduction about what is the Chinese variant and what is Chinese variant Tableau domain and what's the potential issues. So next slide. Next. It's very small. My fault. The Chinese language users throughout the world are more connected to China. I mean, not only China, to Chinese culture than before. I have given you some statistics in 2 years ago, but it was published by the government. There were over 100 million passengers go to from mainland China to, from Taiwan, Hong Kong, and Macau. They also Chinese speaking area to mainland China. And also there about 30 million from mainland China to Hong Kong, Macau, and Taiwan. There's so many communications with each other. And also, there are so many Chinese around the world, except for the 1.4 billion Chinese users in mainland China, Taiwan, Hong Kong, and Macau. There are over about 48 million Chinese users living in other countries, including America and Europe. Especially you see so many Chinese people in San Francisco. For the Chinese variant issues, the Chinese have two writing forms. One is simplified Chinese, and another one is traditional Chinese. Simplified Chinese is primarily used in mainland China and Singapore. I think it's the official language form. And of course, you can see some Chinese simplified Chinese character in Japan. For the traditional Chinese, it's used primarily in Taiwan, Hong Kong, and Macau, and the Southeast Asia countries. And also the used by the communities of Chinese origin in other countries. Next slide. Now the IC and TC are recognized as interchangeable. Millions of Chinese users use both TC and IC in their daily life, and if any attempt to separate IC and TC could create the user confusion, and maybe it result in some critical issues. But if we enable the TC and IC simultaneously, it will be offer the tremendous convenience for the users. And I give you an example in San Francisco. That it was said that over 200,000 Chinese people living in Bay Area. I mean, from the news I heard in last day, it was more than 200,000 people. Most of them are speaking Cantonese and writing traditional Chinese. Because there are so many immigration from Guangdong, from Hong Kong, from other areas speaking Cantonese. But in recent 30 years, the more and more people are speaking simplified, speaking Mandarin and writing simplified Chinese because there's so many immigration from mainland China. Now that is mean that San Francisco in Bay Area is mixed TCN that is speaking and reading area. Next. Simplified Chinese character correspond to more complex traditional characters. What is the simplified Chinese and what is traditional Chinese is a little bit difficult to define, but you can refer to the RFCs. Yeah. You know, RFC 3743 is made by GET, the joint engineering team. This team is include the expert from China and Taiwan and from Japan and from Korea. But specifically to Chinese, for Chinese domain, we have RFC 4713. Yeah, it only for Chinese domain registration and administration. In Unicode, in the latest Unicode standard, there are over 70,000 CDK unified Chinese character. You know, it's a large scope. I only can recognize 10% of that. It's a very big issue to open so many Chinese characters for Chinese domain registration. So we define only 19,000 Chinese characters open for Chinese domain registration. You can refer to those two links. It's published by TLMNIC and CNIC for simplified Chinese and traditional Chinese. In the 19,000 Chinese character, less than 8,000 Chinese character have one or more variant. Yeah, you can see that it's a big issue. Yeah. Another information for you that the Chinese variant issue doesn't mean only TC and SC equivalence. We also have other kind of variant issues, except for the simplified and traditional Chinese. Next slide. Just a quick example. You can see the two Chinese domain name. That means that the Bank of China dot China. Yeah, it's a real name. It's not only an example. It's Bank of China. It's the most famous bank in China. If that is true, two different registrars here, that mean it be some problem. Next slide. I think that is if only Bank of China in simplified Chinese only is allowed to be registered, so that would bring much trouble for users. You can see the picture in the left down. Yeah, it's the logo of Bank of China. You can see that now is the current logo. It's the current logo of Bank of China. Yes, thanks, Francisco. It's the logo of Bank of China now. Yeah, it's totally is a traditional Chinese character. That means that even now, in mainland China, so many companies organized use the traditional Chinese as their brand name and the logo. And in the left side is the Chinese Academy of Sciences. It's my boss. Yeah, it's my organization. It's also used the mixed Chinese character. The second one is the traditional, and the fourth one is the simplified. Yeah, the traditional one is not this one. Okay, give you an example. Next slide. So what's the requirement for Chinese ID variant TID? That means if an applicant apply a Chinese ID in tabular domain, the language check should be provided. If it is Chinese, both simply for Chinese only and traditional Chinese only form must be added into the resource. And mixed one should be reserved for any phishing or other security issue consideration. But what's the issue for CD key? Next slide. You know that in China, Japan, Korea, they use the Han character. Yeah, that means Han character. We separate the language into the Chinese and non-Chinese. Yeah, the Chinese is the ideographic language in the world now, but others, we think that it should be alphabetic or phonetic. I think that Chinese is the only ideographic script in use by native speaking population today. So we have worked for Chinese issues for over 10 years. We have published two RFC for the Chinese domain name registration. So also in Japan, they use the kanji. Yeah, it's Han character. And in Japan, they use hanja for Chinese character. But in Japan, they only use simplified one. And in Korean, they only use the traditional one. Next slide. So that means that Japan and the Korean, they don't need variant. Yeah, the variant issue is the only issue for Chinese community. So I also refer to two links. It's were published by the GPRS and NEDA. Yeah, so it's .kr and .gp. You can see check this table, the only variant in this table. And next slide. Okay, yeah, it's the last slide for my presentation. I think that the common issues for the variant issue, maybe some application issues and other issues. But I want to mention some special issues for Chinese. You know, the first issue is for the string similarity evaluation. You know, maybe for the people they only need 3,000 Chinese characters, but you know, that maybe 6,000 is popular. But there's so many people can't recognize the 6,000, but they only use 3,000. But up to now, for CDNC members, CNIC and GDAMNIC and other CDNC members, they opened over 19,000 Chinese characters for Chinese domain registration. But, you know, that also have other more than 50,000 Chinese characters is potential registration. So what's the limitation for registration? How many is enough? It should be asked. And I also give you two examples that is different forms but a similar meaning. Yeah, you know, it's two characters, it means chi shi. That means that it's yid. Yeah, the meaning is yid. But you can see that the two pictures is totally different, but the meaning is same. And another example is different meanings but similar forms. You can see that. The first one is san, that means san. Yeah, the California sunshine, right? And the second one means sea. Yeah. I'll say that. You can see that the picture is very similar. So the string similarity evaluation is very important. Another issue is the delegation combination. You know, now for .China and for .Taiwan, they have two pairs in the root server. It was delegated now. But if it's for two forms in the root server, and you know, in the second level, third level, it will be a combination issues. But, you know, the principle is better than nothing. Yeah, now the padded delegation, we can give some improvement about the registration and administration of the Chinese domain name. But it's not perfect. But it's better than nothing. But we need a long-term solution. I saw Andrew Sullivan here. Yeah, it is a discussion, a long-term solution for the adding variant issues management. Yeah, but maybe it should be waiting for 10 years for adopted by the whole world. So it's my consideration. So it's okay. Well, yeah, enough.
Thank you very much indeed. Yeah. Thank you for that presentation. Again, we'll move on and we'll take questions at the end of the presentation. Okay. But we're beginning to get a sense of the complexity of the problems that we're trying to work with. Our next speaker is Dr. Mahesh Kulkarni, who is Program Coordinator and Head of GIST Center for Development of Advanced Computing in India. Dr. Kulkarni.
Thank you very much. As you can see the screen, basically, so many scripts are being written, and the message is welcome, that is Suswakadam, written in all different languages. And the key top label showing different languages being used in India. This is the current, what is called the facts and figures and multilingual diversity of India. Constitutionally, 22 languages are there within India. There are total 452 living languages, out of which 22 are constitutionally recognized languages. Two major script families are being used. One is Perso-Arabic family, as well as a Brahmi-based family, which means that some of the languages get written from right to left and some of the languages get written from right to left and left to right. Especially Sindhi, Kashmiri, and Urdu uses Perso-Arabic system, with the notional changes in Sindhi. The remaining 19 languages use 11 derivations of the Brahmi script. So there is one-to-many and many-to-one relationship between the language and script. For example, Santhali and Sindhi, these are two languages, they use more than one script. While Devanagari, which is also a writing style, is used for Sanskrit, Hindi, Marathi, Nepali, Konkani, Maithili, Dogri and Bodo language. So this is a relationship as one-to-many and many-to-one relationship is exist. These are some of the issues, I can say, the challenges I will point it out. We have got certain alternate spellings, that the same spelling has been written different way. Phonetically, they are same. So whether we have to treat them as a variant or we don't have to treat them as a variant, that is one part. Secondly, we have got alternate forms also. So the same spelling has been written in two different ways, Hindi and Hindi, both ways, if you can see. And then there are issues of something called the different inputting mechanism as well as the reordering labels. This is what exactly the what is called the fonts look like. So you have got some base character, and on top of it some what is called the matras and ukars goes, and you see the complexity of the Indian languages over here. And you also see the Perso-Arabic family, which is getting written from what is called the right to left. And we have got a Nusk as well as the Nastaliq script of writing. And when the conjuncts come in the picture, the resulting glyph shape increases manifold, which necessarily means that if there are two characters which are getting combined, the third resultant character will have a totally different shape altogether. Then we try to define what is something called the types of variants, basically. So we saw some definition of the variants over here. One of the definitions, what we felt that we would like to treat homographic variants, that is similar looking. The example of Latin was 1 and 1, 1 and L. At a smaller point size in an address bar, it looks similar. Same things happen in the Indian languages, like one is a dra and another is a na halan da. They look almost similar in a smaller point size. Then second variation is something called the homophonic variants, that is a similar sounding or alternate spelling. So as is the example of color and color in Latin, the same thing applies over here, Hindi and Hindi in Devanagari. And both are the what is called the permissible forms and alternate writing styles. The case variance especially is not, the case is not over here because there is no capitalization in Indian languages unlike Latin or Roman. confusingly similar, so what basically is happening is that most of the browser and application use ID and display labels in minimal size. This results in a maximum number of spoofing and phishing attack. Multi-tier scripts such as used in Indian languages are less readable in the address bar. And Unicode normalization rules also have to be considered as a variant. So which necessarily means that two different Unicode code points can create what is called have one shape, as well as you can have a different two different Unicode code points having the similar shape coming up. this is what exactly we are calling as a homographic variant, that is a similar looking at a smaller point size. If you really see, this is the Telugu script, and in the first box and the second box, if you see, just the dot which is below the character, otherwise they look similar. So this we treat that something called the homographic variance, because at a smaller point size, that dot will not be visible at all. In the case of Tamil variant at the bottom, you can see they are being combined by two different characters, while you can straight away have one Unicode code point, which is 0B94, and they look exactly the similar. Then homophonic variant and alternate spelling, which I discussed about, that valid homophones are there, Hindi versus Hindi. So this is a different way of writing, but both mean the same. That Hindi with Bindi and Bindi with Na Halanda look same. Common misspellings are also been as one of the major issues over here, that India and India. And while formulating the IDN policy for .in, we have not considered these variants, as historically other domains have always consider alternate spelling of the color.com as a separate entities. So we followed an approach wherein we are not going to treat homophone as a variant, but however we will be treating homograph, because that is especially what is getting displayed into the user browser. case variants are not applicable in the case of Indian languages. However, Indian languages are rich in synonym. So when you take a word like Bharat, it has got a synonym like India, Hindustan, and so many synonyms are there. And we'll have to look forward for some solution towards that. There is a major issue in terms of some of the invisible characters like zero-bit joiner and non-joiner being used within the basically character set, and it might be a real issue over here that, again, same, the end user may not be able to decipher but the rendering engine renders in the same way. Need for a variant identification. Indian scripts introduce syllabic variants. So these are something called the syllabic variants. And as you can see, there are two examples at the bottom, which I showed it to you. And these are called the syllabic variant, and they actually mean the same. This is a classic example where I have shown three cases, Maharashtra, written in three different, if you see in the, what is called the bottom line. It is with zero with joiner and without zero with joiner and so on and so forth, but all of them look similar. IDN variants TLD, so what we were suggesting is that we cannot just transliterate the .com because .com stands for commercial. We don't have short forms in Indian languages, and hence short forms for TLDs or IDNs will be a real issue, and it cannot convey any meaning. Example, the word pal in Tamil means milk, while in Marathi it will mean lizard. So these are some of the issues if you translate or if you do transliteration of TLDs. Another solution is to translate the TLDs in different languages. However, since the TLD do not convey the language information, it is likely that the translation suitable for one region may not be suitable for other because of the regional translation requirement. This issue is more specific where the scripts and languages are shared across the borders. And these are issues of something called the expected, the actually display is something like the reordering is not happened over there, but the expected display. So there are certain application related issues also. This is one example of an application related issue. This is something rendering again, wherein there is a unnecessary spaces which have come into the browser. Okay, so what we have done is that we have actually all these Indian languages, 19 out of 22, are having a well-structured form structure, and we have made a well-form structure which is called the ABNF. This policy is uploaded onto our website, and one can download and have a look at the policy for definition of the variants and how we are managing the variants. I will skip this. Thank you.
Thank you very much indeed. And again, apologies for having people rush in 10 minutes through a hugely complicated subject. So again, we see some of the extraordinary complexity that we're going to try and look at and try and what the user expectation is when dealing with domain names, TLDs and domain names in IDNs. Our last speaker is Dr. Carrie Karp, who's the Director of the Internet Strategy and Technology at the Swedish Museum of Natural History. And he's a nice, simple topic. He's going to talk about the Latin script. Isn't that right, Carrie?
So this is the one that we all know. You can take the next slide. Actually, hop over one past that. Okay. The one that we all know, and if it was the one that we all loved, we probably wouldn't even be sitting here. This is the script that's used for a larger number of languages on our planet than any other. However, very few of them, not even English, are served in, fully well by the basic 26-letter version of it. Next slide, please. I'm going to illustrate this with Swedish. Sweden is an extraordinarily erudite member of the network community, has been for a long time. It uses a Latin-based alphabet, A to Z. W was actually added very recently because the World Wide Web needed to be spelled properly. Prior to that, W was a variant of V. Nobody cared. But thanks to this community, the Swedish alphabet is not 28, but now 29 letters long. And it's the last three there that you see that are the unique ones. It's important to note that those three are not decorated versions of A and O. They are atomic letters. They do not decompose. That is not a diacritically marked A, nor A and O with a diaresis above it. Okay. A number of additional diacritical marks are used and regarded as diacritical marks, too, as you might expect the term to be used, to accommodate proper names of non-Swedish origin and a few other orthographic conventions. They're important, but they are regarded as somehow apart from the Swedish alphabet itself. Next slide, please. And I want to drive a point home, especially considering variants, that there can be decorative use of diacritical marking, and there can be contrastive use of it. Well, next slide. For example, in English, naivete can be spelled with or without the diacritical marking. The meaning is absolutely clear. Next slide. However, in the case of resume and resume, by adding a mark, you are changing the meaning of the word. That one single addition is contrastive, which is a fundamental concept, I would believe, to the discussion of variance, whatever we ultimately determine that to mean. Next slide. Here, for example, is the name of the North. This is a fully conceivable TLD label. It is the region inhabited by Denmark, Sweden, Norway, Finland, the Faroe Islands, and Iceland. However, were we to decorate that first O, next slide, please, we'd be changing the meaning of the word completely. The second word is nerd, as we describe it. So aggregating, for example, Nuden, or blocking because of Nuden, the second label, is something that I don't think that would occur to any native Swedish speaker. These are two absolutely separate strings, okay? And another important concept is that of decomposition. Can you take a marked letter and convert it into two unmarked letters? Next slide. Here, for example, that umlauted O, as we would describe it, does not in Swedish orthography decompose to OE. However, if you don't have access to a font that includes the 29th letter of the Swedish alphabet, the alternate orthography is, in fact, the undecorated Nuden. Okay? So perhaps we would need to aggregate the two of them nonetheless, however senseless it otherwise might be. Okay? This becomes critical when talking about proper names. Next slide. Goethe, the author, not even in German can be written alternatively with an umlauted O, and an antiquated form of the Swedish name, Goethe, the second one. Goethe, actually, the closest bookstore to my apartment in Stockholm is Goethe's Bokhandel, and I don't think Goethe would ever regard himself as comparable to Goethe in any regard whatsoever, although he may sell books by him. Okay. The Swedish government approached this in 2005 with a set of guidelines, which they said are only guidelines. However, if they're not followed, we will elevate them to binding directive. And that was, it was nice, saying that any database system that includes proper names that is maintained at Swedish public expense needs to accommodate the following character repertoire. Okay. An obligatory table. That's the one of them. Many of these letters actually do appear in legitimate Swedish context, not foreign. But if you look at the row with the I's in it, you'll see an I without a dot, you'll see an I with a dot, you'll see an I with two dots. These are separate and distinct letters. The notion of aggregating because a base character is contained in one string and another is just a patent absurdity. The nice part about this table is that this is, in fact, all of the Latin letters in the Unicode code chart that are represented at a single code point. You don't need to know what a code point is, okay? And there is an optional second table, if we can have the next chart, that these systems might wish to apply. And if you note there, we have an I with a dot on top of it and an I with a dot on the bottom of it. These are supposed to be entirely foreign to Swedish. This is largely to accommodate Vietnamese. However, there are letters here which are used for writing old Greenlandic. So, in fact, it is a Nordic concern. The nice part there, again, is having both of those two tables available in your permissible IDN repertoire obviates any discussion of what one might want to have. It is the only bunch of such letters that are available in Unicode, and Unicode defines the universe. Okay, next one. Now, there are five official minority languages in Sweden. Swedish itself only recently acquired any legal status at all. It's now legally the main language of the country. Okay. And of the five minority languages, two, Sami and Romani, are not individual languages. There are groups of languages. So if we were to want, which is a perfectly reasonable thing to want, a set of names, Sweden, explicitly, in the names that have legal status in the country, we would get the following list. Next slide. Okay. I will spare you telling you which of these names is. This is Sweden, and it's the fourth from the bottom, Sverige. That's the Swedish name for Sweden. And then we have other languages. Okay. This is a reasonable aggregate, a reasonable variant set, whatever terminology we're going to settle on, for the Swedish government to put forward as its stake in the, well, this is our name and these are our languages. It's not an IDN issue. There are three things here that are IDN labels. All the rest are flat ASCII. And in fact, there's yet another minority language which doesn't use the Latin script at all. It uses Hebrew script, Yiddish. So the set of names of Sweden is two scripts, some ASCII, some IDN Latin otherwise. And that's a reasonable aggregate. But if we take another look, okay, one more. The Sami languages, here are three of about, depending on how you count, at least six, maybe twice as many again, Sami languages, names of Sweden. These are the three that are common in Sweden. There are others common in other Nordic countries. The Sami territory spans the Scandinavian peninsula and goes into the Kola Peninsula, which is a part of Russia. And in fact, you would expect to see a Cyrillic representation in that aggregate. Next slide, please. And here are four of many Romani languages, some of which are also written in Cyrillic. And they might also wish to have their full set of names. So if we look at the vertical structure, these are the names that Sweden might wish to aggregate. And then we have two horizontal slices there. These are the names that two of the major participating minority communities in the country might wish to have. How do you deal with a situation, that's actually my last slide, in fact, where a given label appears with equal legitimacy in several what would be variant aggregates? So the whole thing is multiplied in an additional dimension here. And this is Sweden, which doesn't gripe much. We're comfortable with .se. But if, as is now happening, Latin, which was barred arbitrarily from the fast-track process, now has to be accommodated in the policy basis for the steady-state CCTLD IDNification, and certainly for the GTLD space. If the Swedish case is as intricate as this, how intricate more are the complicated cases going to be?
That's an easy one.
This is an easy one. Yeah. But again, the relief is provided in the fact that the character repertoire is given. That's not the issue. But as it appears in the variant space, certainly is.
Well, okay. Thank you very much. And if you stay here, because I'll ask the other speakers to come up to the front, and Francisco, maybe you will sit down in the front row. And Nayeli, you will stay here because I need you to monitor the remote participation. So can our other speakers come up here? And we'll open the floor to questions from the audience. So while the speakers are coming up, just to remind you what this project is about, it's to try and identify what the user expectation is when we have IDN variants. So, question. Please come to the microphone. Please identify yourself, and please ask your question of one or all of the speakers.
Okay. My name is Chris Dillon, and I come from University College London, and I would like to ask a question. Actually, I think he's gone, of Xiaodong Li about that Chinese, about a Chinese case, in fact.
Xiaodong, he's coming up.
Thank you. Now, I noticed under the fast track that mainland China was given .Zhongguo, both in simplified characters and in traditional characters. And I think during your talk you said, this is a sort of a temporary solution, that basically if there is a situation where a character has two forms, that actually it may end up being given both of them. I think the SC form was the main one, and the TC form was the variant. But I was a bit intrigued because you hinted that may not be an approach that could be continued with.
I think it doesn't mean that it's a temporary solution. Currently, we use the standard of ATF. We delegate the two different domain name in simplified and traditional into the same S record. Yeah, to ensure that user have the same experience to visit a different simplified traditional Chinese. But I think I mentioned in my presentation it's not a perfect solution, because that two record, so it bring some trouble for the administrator. But if even in the future, if you have a solution, I think it would be transferred from current solution to the future one. Mm-hmm. So yes. Don't worry about that. Yeah, I think it's an engineering issue. So.
It would have been rather interesting if it had been a situation where there was more than one simplified character, because in many cases, actually, China has one set of simplified characters and Japan has another. In that particular case, the two simplified characters are the same, but there are other situations where they are different. So it would be rather interesting to see what happens if something like that comes up.
Yeah, it's also my concern. But I have comes out with some people from Japan. Yeah, you can read the island table. They don't think they have variant issues, but maybe you should discuss with some Japanese expert deeply. Yeah, you know, sure, there's so many same simplified Chinese character in Japan and mainland China.
They're usually the same, but not all.
Yeah, many same. You know, about 1,000 and 1,900 Chinese characters is used in Japan now. Yeah, there's so many characters is very similar, all same, because the Unicode they're doing the CG key unification. That means that all of the characters in CG unification scope is the same character in China and Korea and Japan.
Indeed, yes. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Thank you for the question. We have a speaker at the back. Please, again, identify yourself.
Hi, my name is Andrew Sullivan, and I guess today I'm wearing my IETF DNS Extensions Working Group hat. I wanted to ask, and I guess this is probably a question to the panel, there were a number of examples here that were cases of Unicode decomposition versus composed character issues, some of which are potentially solved just by the way IDNA works or possibly by policy issues. There were other issues that had to do with user interface and the way that different applications do things on different platforms. And then there were cases that were potential user confusion that was, possibly phishing issues or the like. And I would like maybe if we could sort out which ones of these things are the things that we think we could actually tackle versus the ones that we just don't have any power over. In particular, I'm wondering if people might comment on the potential for users to adapt to some of these cases. We have the example in English, for instance, of color and color, all of those kinds of things, and users have just learned to accommodate themselves to that. Some of these cases, I think maybe users are going to be able to do it. We saw the example that .in has decided not to worry about those cases. So if you could say a little bit more about which one of these cases you think are truly deeply impossible versus the ones that you think users are going to be able to cope with, that would be very, very helpful, at least from my point of view.
Thank you for the question. Who would like to pick that up? Please.
Okay, so as you would probably guess, it's a gray area. And at some point, arbitrarily, some line has to be drawn. And the question is, how far down or up you move that line? Reasons for this or motivation for this project is to actually try to start formalizing that and look at script-specific, perhaps policy rather than a generic policy, which probably wouldn't be possible. yes, that's a good question. Where does one draw the line? I think one of the criteria eventually is not going to be just linguistic. A lot of motivation is going to come from the security and stability criteria, I think. And that's really going to be eventually the deciding factor. So that's going to define the baseline. And then one can see how much more up, you could move, but you would not be able to go below that threshold which starts infringing upon the security and stability of the system. These are things which we have been grappling with, at least from my own experience within the Arabic script community. We have had a group, it's called Arabic Script IDN Working Group, in which we discuss many of these things for many, many days. I personally look forward to the opportunity within the community to discuss this and try to come up with a coherent definition for this. If you're looking for an answer, I'm sorry, I can't give you one right now. But I think, again, just to close my comment, eventually the criteria is going to be a stability and security criteria. Linguistics is going to be then on top of it.
Dr. Kulkarni?
Dennis, excuse me. Yes. We have two comments from online, when you're ready.
Thank you very much. We'll just take a response to this question and then go to the online. Dr. Kulkarni.
We were also studying this variant for a very long time, and when we talked about .bharat as a CCTL to be given and applied, we looked at three definitions of the variants in my presentation also. That one was homograph, basically. Another was homophone, that is similar sounding and similar, this color.com, and so on and so forth. So we felt that going into the homophonic, similar sounding, will be opening a Pandora's box. And then we decided that we should restrict to the homograph, which is a similar looking, because that's where the end user is going to see some of the things, like the famous example of paypal.com, 1 and L. And that is where I think he also referred to the security concerns, that people should not be taken to a fish site, and that's where the priority should lie. And hence we decided, at least in our country, to say that the definition is, for us, is more or less clear, that it is confusingly similar characters. And when you talked about the Unicode normalization part, that we have built it into something called the variant table itself. So we have built a variant table. So as he was also referring to the same glyph or the same shape appearing through two different code points, we took it as a variant, basically. And most of the things what we felt are, though Indian languages are very complex in nature, and 22 different languages and so on and so forth, we felt that there is still a structure within that. And if we look at that structure, then homograph should be an ideal situation to handle the variant tables.
Thank you. Nayela, can I take a comment from the public participation, from the remote participation?
Yes. First one. Good afternoon. My name is David Cohen, speaking in my own capacity. Assuming that Mr. Kolesnikov is correct and in Cyrillic there is no variant issues/difficulties, is this and or other working groups plan on allowing the languages and or scripts who face no variant issues to proceed to the next step, in parentheses, confusion/ASCII similarity, or whichever the next step is determined to be?
A very interesting and very good question, which I don't know the answer to, because I'm not sure that that is a full and complete statement about the Cyrillic script that will be accepted by everybody. If it is, it's most likely that the next step will be to look at the confusability between similar scripts. But we're essentially looking for advice on the, first of all, the variants, and then moving on to confusability. But the point is well made, and I don't have an answer to the question. Do you want to take the second comment from?
Sure. The second one comes from Muhammad al-Bashir. He says, I think the Arabic script presentation contained examples of mixing of scripts. Does the presenter think if IDN guidelines and registry internal policies in handling variants, in parentheses, bundling or blocking, beside non-mixing of scripts, could limit the types of similarity confusion?
Excellent question. Dr. Hussain.
I'm not sure what he's or she's referring to as mixing of scripts, because what I was presenting was entirely within Arabic script. Is he referring to, or she referring to, mixing of languages?
It's Muhammad.
So
I think so.
So yeah. I maybe if you're listening, If you can rephrase that question more precisely, I can respond to it.
Okay, I'll ask.
Okay, thank you for that. Carrie, you wanted to make a comment?
Since reference was made to the IDN guidelines, they specifically require or forbid, depending on how you want to look at it, the commingling of scripts in a given label. So if there is a character from a Unicode-named script in that label, and that's something that can be identified algorithmically, then that is the only script that may appear in that label. You can have different languages in the name, but one script, and no, script, not language, script in a label.
And just to follow that comment, script as defined as a script in the Unicode table.
There's something that's crept into this discussion which perpetually puzzles me, and that since when is there a requirement for a domain name label to be a word in any language?
I don't have an answer to that question, but indeed a good question. Edmund, you're next. Can you identify yourself?
Thank you. This is Edmund Chung from DotAsia. Actually, I wanted to add to Christopher and Xiaodong's comments on I think in terms of temporary or current exception situation, I think the board actually also mentioned in one of the resolutions, Dennis, I think you might can correct me if I'm wrong, but have a resolution specifically saying that the arrangement for the .China and .Taiwan situation is somewhat of an exception, and this is this work is part of coming out of that resolution as well, that we need to look at a longer term solution. When Xiaodong mentioned that there is also a possibility of a technical solution that's even more ideal in the future, I just want to add that the current implementation is something that's acceptable so far in terms of the deployment. I think the user experience has been good, and what has been done is something. I think the experience there could be somewhat of an input into the discussions here as well. So I don't, even though it's, I guess, quote unquote, temporary, it's not something that's, people are having problems with at this point. But of course, there are more ideal scenarios. But adding to that, also is that, if you look at the .Taiwan situation, in fact, there are actually additional issues. There are two strings delegated. There are actually, I think one more that is a preferred string that would under certain policies should be also delegated. So I think those are scenarios which this group I guess these studies would also look into. So in terms of temporary solution, yes, kind of. Then that's why we want to work more on it. But technically, it's something that still works at this point. So there's no immediate need to make a lot of technical changes, at least for Chinese. And that brings me to my last note: is that you're right, and we are working with the Chinese, and the Chinese community has worked on this problem for a long time, and perhaps with all the experience, with all the knowledge and the user experience input into this process, Chinese may be one of those that could come out of the gate, if you will, sooner than at the end of some other issues. So that's thank you.
Thank you for that, Edmund. As currently constructed, just to make one comment first, as currently constructed, the idea is that we'll do the five cases, there will be five case reports, and then we'll do a common issues. So we're not envisaging that one case, one script will move more rapidly than another, but that may be something that comes out of the studies. Xiaodong, would you want to comment?
I just want to add into Adam Chan's comment. Yeah. Just want to give you some numbers. Up to now, there are 350,000 Chinese domain name .China have been registered. And how many queries per day? And how many queries? About 15% is query traditional Chinese domain name, and then 85% is query simplified Chinese domain name. But up to now, there are no complaint about the current registration and administration policies. That's some numerism, but adding into Adam Chan's comment, just for your information. Yeah.
Thank you. Now we have a question from the back. We've been waiting patiently, sir.
Dave Crocker, Brandenburg Internetworking. The mechanism that allows using or adding attachments to email is called MIME, and it was created about 20 years ago. Its original motivation was to support international characters in email. This is a topic that I knew nothing about. I know only slightly more now. There were lengthy presentations by experts of the day, and I had several reactions to watching those presentations. One was that this was an incredibly complicated topic. That assessment has not changed today. The second was that the people who were working on this had been working on it for a long time, were very intelligent, very knowledgeable, and well-intentioned. And that assessment has not changed. And that I was, as a consequence, very happy that I didn't have to be the one working on this. That assessment hasn't changed either. However, the reason I got up was because I'm starting to have, actually I have for a while had, a concern that the very extreme complexity of this, coupled with the very real nature of the problem, is causing us to miss the fact that solving this problem, it is not clear that that solving this problem will actually do something important. What I mean by that, it was really excellent to have the Swedish example up there. And whether it's the simplest example of this problem, what's nice is you can get your brain about that category of the problem. I can't get my brain around the category for the other scripts that we saw, which is to say that at its simplest, this is a horrendously challenging situation. As Andrew Sullivan pointed out, we have examples in the real world of humans adapting to this kind of a problem. I am hoping that the research you're doing, the discussions you're doing, will look very carefully at the question of the difference between the mathematical problem, which is what we saw examples of today, which is to say absolute differences, versus the human problem. In addition, if you solve these, and let's assume for the moment that you solve them 100%, then the question is, how much of the larger set of problems on the internet has been solved? For example, if you solve all of these character problems, will we stop phishing? Will we stop abuses on the net? The answer, of course, is no, but maybe this will solve 50% of them. Well, I doubt that. And yet what is certain is that any mechanisms that deal with this space are going to be complicated. We know that when we create complicated mechanisms, we create new problems. And they cost a lot. Consequently, I am hoping that as choices are made, very serious consideration of the cost versus the benefit and the problem versus the mechanism or the underlying technical detail versus the larger social detail is balanced a lot more carefully. Over in the ITF, I know we often suffer from not paying attention to these larger issues. And I'm hoping in the ICANN forum they get better balance.
Thank you for the comment. Carrie, I think you want to respond.
You moved from commenting on the comfortable attributes of the mathematical facet of this, but you moved into a very narrow next door facet, as though that were the purpose of all of this. The purpose of this is not to obviate the kind of anguish that you're rightly concerned about. The purpose of this is to recognize the fact that the user community is broadly polyglot, and a whopping fraction of that population would probably find any situation illustrated in ASCII infinitely more confusing than you found the scripts here. So there's a cultural substratum here that that's what we're building on, and it creates problems. We're not simply doing things only if they solve a problem that we know. We are doing this because we have to, aware of the fact that it is equally likely to generate unforeseen problems that may actually eclipse the kinds of things that you're quantifying, but it's something that simply has to be done.
Yes, the next 4 billion users, from when we go from 2 billion to 6 billion users, the next 4 billion will be using personal mobile devices in languages that I certainly know nothing about and in scripts that I know nothing about. Any other comment on that? Okay, next question, please.
Kenny Huang, board member of Titanic and also APNIC EC and also co-author of RFC 3743. I was told to give some brief introduction to the RFC. I'm not sure how many of you familiar with RFC 3743. But basically, I just give some design principle why there's come out with the RFC. The original idea for TCSC basically, that was the exception case, because the original idea TCSC was try to implement in the protocol layer. But unfortunately, we didn't make it because we were told this stuff should be moved to the registration process. That's why we moved to the in the registration process that come out with the IDN guideline. But based on our capacity, because the RFC 3743 was made by China, Taiwan, Korea, and Japan, so basically our capacity only focus on hand character. So the major contribution I can see from the RFC, whether it's useful or not, I'm not so sure, but major contribution come from the RFC is 3 points. The first point is validation, because initially they introduced the validation concept to the IDN, so we need to set some limit set for IDN registration. The second contribution is we need to respect our localized normalization. Why can I say normalization? Because basically it doesn't come from Unicode consortium, but we think that's definitely needed. So in the IFC, we call it a preferred call point. And the third point is that's prohibited call point we call variant, whole set of variant. So based on the scenario, the three column of table was created. Let's come out with an INR table set, table repository. So that's the scenario. When we come out, with the table, what's the table useful based on our capacity for the hand character. But I'm not sure whether it is scalable enough to extend to all kind of language. Now, based on my understanding when I reviewed the table from the INR, eventually I found a lot of table probably maybe not so effective. I'm not sure whether they try to implement that kind of table because it doesn't comply with the IFC principle. That's what I'm going to say. Thank you.
Thank you very much for that. I'm going to have to draw this to a conclusion because we're running out of time. I'm sure we could spend a lot more time on this, and indeed I wish we had much more time for each of our presenters. Just to remind you, this is the launch of the IDN Variant Issues project. There's a draft project plan on the web. We're looking forward to your comments and suggestions to make that the final initial project plan so we can kick off this project. The first thing we're looking to do is to recruit teams of experts, linguistic language end-user experts in the various scripts, to tell us what the users expect the system to do. What do they expect when they enter a domain label? What do they expect when they enter an email address with the domain end part of it? What do they expect when there are variants? Because we need to know what the problem is before we can begin to address what the solutions might be. And one final word. There is an expectation, and there has been an expectation, that somehow this is a technical problem that the technical people ought to solve. Well, if it is only solvable by, for example, changing the DNS protocol, then that is something that doesn't happen on a timescale that will meet anybody's expectations. The DNS is a very loosely coupled system, and so if there were a requirement in the DNS protocol that was required to be everywhere, then we're talking about a long, 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 long time before we can guarantee that every part of the DNS will respond in the appropriate fashion. So do not think that this is something that you can say to the technical people, you ought to solve this, because that may not be any solution to the problem. However, let's go back up. We're looking to start a project. We're looking to recruit lots of people. We're looking for the community to work on this project. And our project is to support the community, arrive at a definition of what's expected from the system in the area of IDN variants. Can I ask you to thank our speakers who attempted, very succeeded, in 10 short minutes, giving us some idea of the complexity. Gentlemen, thank you very much indeed.